Time to deal with all those aches and pains and sprains and strains out there on in Wisconsin land. Our guests today, Lori Dine Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in Physical Therapy at the UW Medical School. Our regular guests back again to talk with us about how to deal with all those aches and pains that come along. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you listening in. If you have a question for our guests, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Lori, welcome back. Good to have you.
It's great to be back. It's a beautiful, well, not a beautiful day yet, but it's going to be beautiful later in the week, so I expect there's going to be some gardeners out.
Yeah, Bill, what do you think?
I hope it's nice pretty soon. It is mid-April, by the way.
It has been cold.
And you know, gardeners, getting out for that first bit of the year, we've been out and done, you know, we've raked the lawn, but we haven't gotten into the digging in the garden and all of that sort of handwork. Are there some things we ought to be thinking about?
Absolutely.
I think where people can get into trouble is doing the same activity for hours at a time. Usually there's hours and hours of work that needs to be done this time of the year. So people are weeding and they're bent over and pulling and yanking. You know, for a couple of hours, your back's going to start talking to you. You're going to feel it the next morning. And usually there's more than one activity that's needed in most yards. So if you can split the tasks up and maybe spend half hour, 45 minutes, an hour max at one, and then go to another activity and then come back and finish up, that's where you can kind of ease the pain from some of the overuse conditions that people get from doing this pretty high-level activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big factor, is trying to break it up as much as you can. And people get, you know, spring fever and they're feeling good and just have to stop and think that they're going to feel it the next day and it's just going to knock them out. It's better to take a little bit at a time. Spend some time looking through the gardening catalogs with your feet up.
All right.
Sorry, good break time.
Lori in River Falls has a question for you, too. So let's go to Lori. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
My son was on the playground and went down the slide with his dad on Thursday. And we think he sprained his ankle. He's not quite 2 years old. We took him into the emergency room. They did some x-rays. They didn't show any fractures or breaks. He doesn't have any swelling on the ankle, no bruising. It doesn't seem tender to the touch. We can flex it, you know, with some pressure, but he will not walk on it. He will not put any pressure when he goes to stand. So he's been crawling around all weekend. Hmm. And I'm taking him in to see his doctor this afternoon, but I guess I'm just trying to learn as much as I can about his injury.
Hmm. That's interesting. Typically kids will, they'll reflect exactly what they're feeling. So, you know, an older kid will think that they're supposed to stand and walk on it, so they'll get up and walk around and limp on it, but someone that age won't. So you don't see any signs of anything at all?
No, never got swollen at all. It never, I'm pretty sure I heard a snap.
Okay. What
when
was
they came down the slide?
So when they came down, what was the position or the mechanism of the injury?
Well, he was sitting in his father's lap, and then when they came down the slide, what happened was his leg kind of kicked out a little bit, and it ended up getting kind of wedged on the way down in between the slide and his dad's leg.
Yeah.
So it really gave it a really fast torque.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And he said, ow, right away, and started crying. And, you know, it wasn't a bloody murder scream. But and then after that, he just wouldn't stand on it. So.
Right. Yeah, he really needs some closer evaluation. And I'm glad that you're going to see your regular doctor today who you know and knows your son. And we'll investigate it further, because your son's at a really important age for walking.
Well, what I'm concerned about is if it's a ligament tear or something like that, How well will he heal? Is this going to cause him problems down the road? I mean,
oh, he'll heal remarkably well.
Okay,
far better than you or I would.
Okay.
So the big thing is just to make sure that there's no other major structural damage that wasn't picked up on a plain radiograph.
Okay,
so he needs a good examination by someone who's really familiar with kids.
So even if maybe his regular doctor, maybe I should even be seeing somebody who is more specialized.
Well. see what his doctor says first, and then watch him and see if you can't get him up walking. If you want to encourage the walking or try to get him moving fast, you could try taking him to a pool and see if he'll stand with limited weight bearing in the pool, or even if you have a deep enough bathtub, you could see if he'll stand in that with your support and put weight on it in a bathtub.
Now, is it okay for us to be trying to maybe encourage him to try to use it, or should we just be trying to keep it as isolated? And
I think he will take the lead on it at this point in time. Until you have more information from his physician, I would follow your son's lead.
So really trust what his, his body's doing, what he's doing with it. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Good
All
luck,
right.
Lori.
Thank you.
Let us know how it turns out, Lori.
Yeah, I will. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Maureen and Ripon, we're on to you now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you.
Sure.
I am a 60-year-old woman. Kind of hard to say that. I had a scoping of my knee in October with torn meniscus and also some arthritis repair. And I did my exercises faithfully at home, but I feel like I'm a 150 getting out of bed in the morning. I have to grasp my bed as I walk a few steps, and then I'm able to walk. I'm a walker. I haven't been able to do my walking as I've had been. I am overweight, but I'm working on that always. And also, if I'm sitting in a position longer than an hour, I get up like a 150-year-old person, too. Any insights?
Well, back up just a second. When you had your scope last October, did you have an acute injury where you tore your meniscus?
Oh, yes. My dog knocked me down. And I love him dearly. But, that was the issue.
Okay. And when you said they did some surgery for your arthritis, can you tell me what they did?
Well, he said he did some scraping. I didn't further any
scraping.
Details. Yeah, of that.
Okay.
I know I do have arthritis, so I don't know if this has made it a little bit more. I don't know. What can you say?
Yeah. Well, what I can say is you probably had some wear and tear arthritis in your knee. Mm-hmm. You had your incident with the dog, and you lost the meniscus. The meniscus works to help maintain the health of your joint surfaces. So the combination of losing some of your meniscus and already having existing arthritis sort of made an exponential trauma to your knee. It aged it quite a bit in a very short period of time.
Darn.
So that's probably what you're feeling. It doesn't mean that it can't get better.
Okay.
So your body weight is working against you.
Yes.
So that has to be dealt with. And at this point, I'd say the best place for you to work is in a pool.
Okay.
Because you can work vigorously with a limited amount of weight on your knee joint. Your knee joint is still trying to heal that arthritic surface where they scraped it up.
Okay.
That's trying to heal. It actually takes many months for that to heal because cartilage turns over very slowly. So you're looking at, a minimum of 6 months and anywhere up to 24 months for that surface to remodel.
Okay.
So you still have time, but you don't want to be beating it up in the meantime. So a pool's a good place to exercise, help get some weight off, build up the strength in your legs, your quadriceps, your butt muscles, your hip muscles. If your doctor didn't give you exercises or send you to physical therapy for that kind of instruction, I'd request a referral to PT at this point in time to build up some strength in that leg, and that will help save wear and tear on your knee also.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jerry and Mauston, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. I have almost the same exact symptoms as that young lady, and I say young lady ahead of me. 60 is not a bad age. Anyway, my thing is my knee gets so stiff, and I'm just wondering, is it okay to bend that beyond the range of motion that it's letting me do right now? Can I stretch that out? Is that going to hurt anything?
Yeah, stretching generally is a good thing for most people. And what I generally recommend is the kind of pain you don't want to stretch through or exercise through is pain that is sharp, grabbing, pinching, or shooting. And you're better off starting with a stretch that's more gentle, kind of a submaximal stretch, and hold it for a little longer time frame, maybe 20 to 30 seconds. For your knee, a good way to stretch it is if you have you're sitting and you have a rolling chair or a stool on wheels, mm-hmm. where you can plant that foot and just gently roll forward and backward, is a gentle way to work that knee joint. So stretching within those parameters generally is a really good thing. The question I have is, you know, why is the knee so stiff? Do you know why?
They found a bone chip in there that was really worn, you know, smooth all the way around. And plus, this last week I was on my knees an awful lot. I use knee pads, but that's still, I think that's what's caused the swelling right now.
Yeah. Well, and if you have swelling alone will cause stiffness, and that could also be related to our last caller, too, if there's some residual swelling. You know, if there is some swelling or you're going to do activity like that wearing a knee sleeve, you can go to a drugstore and get a stocking and put that around the knee. That can help a little bit. If you have some swelling and you're sitting, try to have that leg propped up. Above the hip, that can help drain some of the fluid out of that area. And if you're on your feet a lot with the osteoarthritis that it sounds like you have at that knee, really good footwear with some cushioned soles, so more of the weight-bearing load can be absorbed through your shoes and feet, and less will get to your knee.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joan in Superior emailed us, and two months ago she tripped and injured her left knee, didn't see a doctor. Knee is still sore but getting better. It seems to be aggravated by twisting and going up and down stairs. No heat and very minimal swelling. It's helped by ibuprofen. At this point, should I still rest my knee, or is it okay to start using it more, like taking an extra 20-minute walk a day, and will continued use of ibuprofen, 3 tabs 3 times a day, do any good? I'll be showing a horse in a month and need to jog a short distance, so I'd like to take the route to get that healed as soon as possible.
Oh, well, with that information, well, we have to base our answer only on the information that we have. So she tripped and twisted hurt her knee and twisted it. Things that can happen when you twist your knee. You can tear some of the ligaments in it. You can damage your meniscus, such as Maureen did a couple calls ago. You can stir up your kneecap. So any of those problems are possible, and they all might have a different answer. So anyway, I'm going to start with the fact that she has to show a horse in a month and back up from there. To be taking that much ibuprofen this far out tells me that she probably needs to have that knee looked at. If she has enough pain and discomfort and swelling that she's taking that much ibuprofen, then it's something that needs to be evaluated so that she can get the right kind of care for it. In the meantime, if her goal is to get through this next month, then she could probably stay on the course that she's on. She can try a little bit of extra walking and see how her knee likes it, and a little bit of light jogging and see how her knee likes it. But she's not going to want to try that, you know, 10 minutes before showtime. She's going to need to road test that a little bit ahead of time. If it looks like she can't make it and it's going to be tough, she may want to go in and have that knee looked at sooner rather than later. And they might be able to give her some strategies to actually to help her get through the next month to be able to show that horse.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, Joan mentioned the sharp pain might kind of the twisting and stairs. So if she can walk on a relatively flat surface and jog in a straight line where there's minimal twisting, hopefully she doesn't step into a pothole.
Right.
She's out with her horse. But I would agree with Lori on both counts. It sounds like if time was going to do it with the ibuprofen, she should be better than she is. But looking ahead to her activity a month from now, is try the walking and see how that knee responds.
See how it goes.
Yeah.
Ann in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Ann.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just have an exercise question. I do a fairly lengthy, simple yoga routine in the morning, and one of the items is to roll your neck around. My question is, I've heard it's unsafe to tip your neck way back. Is that true? I do it also sort of in the cobra pose and some of these other poses where you know, look upward.
Yes. Looking back upright is it's a normal motion, but of all the movements of the head and neck, that is the one that carries the most risk but it's usually for people that have excessive mobility, hypermobility, or instability in the neck. We're looking up all the way to the back can cause problems, or they have some significant degenerative changes due to arthritic changes in the neck. If you look up far enough and you get lightheaded, you get dizzy, you get sick to your stomach, you get tingling in your hands and feet, your body's telling you, don't look up in that direction and go see a physician. But as long as you, if you do the stretch gently and slowly, and just avoid any kind of pinching or any of the sensations I mentioned, you know, it's a movement that is that we need for day-to-day function.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests here as we talk aches, pains, sprains, and strains. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join our conversation today as we visit with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault from the UW, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Ed in Marshfield's been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Ed, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you.
Well, I'm just pulling off the road here so we can chat. My problem, and I'll just stick to my knee, is I have one knee. This started about 2 years ago. I was climbing up a ladder, and I noticed that I had plenty of strength in one knee, and I couldn't actually put all my weight on that knee and move up on the ladder. So I went into my doc, and he sent me to physical therapy, and we did lots of exercises, and we built up that other knee. But what we found as time went on, that there was a muscle on the inside of my leg above the knee that was considerably larger on my good knee and smaller on my weak knee. And I've had been fitted for orthotics, and I wear those almost every day during my work day. I'm noticing I'm having some issues with the knee again, and, of course, I was supposed to be doing my exercises to strengthen that knee. My question is, if the guests are following me, why would that muscle in that leg, and I'm a fairly avid runner. I don't run during the bitter months, but I do run 2 to 3 days a week during the nice weather in Wisconsin. Why would that muscle in that leg actually deteriorate and go down? It's noticeably different from my good knee to my poor knee.
Well, what kind of work do you do?
Office work.
Okay. And history of any other kinds of sports or sports injuries as a kid?
No.
Okay. 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 Typically, we don't see asymmetries like that. We see them in people who play sort of unilateral sports, tennis in the upper extremity. If you're a hurdler or a pole vaulter where you take off on one leg and you have legs that have a different power function, you know, a shot putter or something like that, where you have an asymmetry in how your legs function, then we would expect to see some differences reflective of that
function.
Okay,
I might be able to help.
Okay.
I did water ski for 7 years on a ski club.
Okay.
And I did use my left leg predominantly, and that is my good knee.
Okay. Well, that might explain the asymmetry then, because it's particularly in your youth, at the time when most of your growth and development is happening, if you're in an asymmetrical activity like that, you can develop those asymmetries that just stay the rest of your life and are reflective of the kinds of experiences you had as a kid. So that might be why, and it may be something historically with the position that you were in that set you up for having problems now, that one leg was a lot stronger and you're doing the same repetitive activity now running, but one leg is, you know, mechanically functioning a little bit differently than your other one.
Okay.
Ed, a question for you: is the on the involved side is the atrophy or is it throughout the entire thigh? Did you say inside your leg is where you saw the difference?
And I should. It's actually the muscle above the knee, and it's really the. I guess it would be what I'll just call the quadriceps.
Groin.
So, it's So it's really not on the inside. It's on the top.
Okay.
The
top. Okay. So the that we were talking about, the vastus medialis portion of your quadriceps, or four muscles on the front of your thigh, the quadriceps, quad four. And Bill and I were just talking, the vastus medialis obliquus is the one that's most on the inside, and people look for asymmetries between the medialis and the lateralis for people who have kneecap problems. So that may be some of the origin of that problem.
Okay.
So that makes sense now.
All right.
At least it does to us. We hope it does to you and the rest of the world. Or maybe the fact that it makes sense to us is all that Ed needed to know.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for calling. All right. Well, let's go to a back issue, I think. Sherry in Madison's with us. Sherry, hi.
Well, good morning, Larry and guests. I'm going back to what you started with at the program with gardening, and unfortunately I gardened for 4 hours the first time and my sacroiliac went out about 2 days later, and I'm just wondering now that I'm better and probably going to start gardening again, what preventative kinds of exercises would be good to do to help my SI joint not go out?
Well, there's a couple things. The position that we're in most of the time we're gardening is that we're bent forward. We're forward flexed. And so there are certain muscles and tendons and ligaments that are put under a prolonged stretch when we're in those positions. So, you know, every 15, 20 minutes, half hour max, standing up and stretching in the opposite direction. You can put your hands on the back of your hips and just gently arch your back in the opposite direction and doing it gently. The analogy would be is if you take your finger and bend it back as far as you can towards your wrist and hold it there for 30 minutes. When you let go of that finger, it's a little stiff and sore as you move it in the opposite direction. But if you take that approach, that especially after 4 hours, it'll help eliminate some of that kind of soreness. So gently stretching in the opposite direction that you're in. The other thing with gardening that can decrease pressure on your back, if there's something you can sit on or if you can kneel, so you have pads for your knees, so your back is supported. You have weight on your knees and on one hand, and you can yank, weeds with one hand or do some digging with one hand. The more you can do that as opposed to just bending at the waist and doing your work, the better. There's less pressure on the back. And just general principles for anybody with back, just the better general conditioning that we're in, so whether it's walking or biking or swimming, that carries over to all activities.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Sherry. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Mike in Oshkosh up next. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Question for you regarding a knee skiing thing. About 2 months ago, I was skiing out west, and I severely twisted my right leg inwards. The ski didn't let loose quite as soon as it should have, and had pain in my hip and also, of course, in the right knee. Well, being out west, I didn't want to sacrifice the trip, so I went out and purchased one of these brace-type things with the mechanical hinges on both sides of the knee, and tried to size it right according to my weight and the measurement. They actually went by measurement of the calf. And it seemed a little bit tight, but I got through the week, and when I got back, I noticed that I had an area just to the left and below the kneecap that late in the day you could press on it, and you left like a deep fingerprint. It didn't pop back, some
mm-hmm.
type of edema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a couple people thought I should be seen for that, so I was. And I talked to the doctor, and I said, oh, about taking, I mentioned that I was taking aspirin a day to slight blood thinner to keep things flowing, no clots, and that I had taken to wearing support hose, which he thought was a very good idea. And but the problem is that it still comes back late in the day. And, of course, when I make an appointment to see him, that's always in the morning or early afternoon.
Yeah, of course, of course. And they're wondering why you're there.
Yeah. Right. So any ideas? Should I go see him again or what?
So you're still having the swelling. Are you having any pain or any problems with the function of your knee?
No.
Okay.
But it's worrisome.
Okay. There's nothing that I find terribly alarming. I mean, below your kneecap, you have a fat pad. And this is clearly different from the other side where you, when you press in.
Absolutely.
And there's, is there anything in your calf? It's all contained in your knee joint.
Well, actually, it's like in the very upper end of the calf. Towards the inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Being that far down, it doesn't sound like it's actually in the knee joint itself.
No,
it sounds like it's extra articular. There could be, there's some, a bursa there that could be inflamed and swollen at that time of day, but typically that would hurt if you push on it.
And it doesn't.
And it doesn't, so.
Mike, you said there's no pain. Does your knee ever lock on you or give out on you?
No.
Okay.
And I've been skiing since then, more locally over in Michigan, and I was able to get through with the brace and work fine.
Yeah. I don't hear anything that has me terribly concerned. So, you know, I'd keep an eye on it. And, you know, if you can make an appointment to see him again, get his last appointment of the day, and go see him and have him look at it again, that'd be fine. But I don't see anything urgent about it.
All right.
At this point.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Chad in Menominee, you are up next. Hi, Chad.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for the guests. I'm wondering, I had a shoulder injury a while ago. I was a college football player, and I repeatedly dislocated my shoulder and had it scoped once, did some sort of laser procedure, and I don't recall the name of that. I've had it looked at since by an orthopedic surgeon, and at this point we would have to have reconstructive surgery. But decided that that wouldn't be the best course of action, seeing as I don't do anything terribly active that puts my shoulder out in a vulnerable position. And my question is, I'm only 27 years old, but I'm looking, you know, 20 years into the future. What can I do, as I already have some arthritis and aching in the shoulder, especially if I'm working out, to prevent further problems, you know, let's say when I'm 40, 50 years old, if your guests would have any comments.
Sure.
Well, and I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. The most important thing is that the kind of dislocation that he's describing, the frank dislocation of the shoulder, is typically not associated with arthritis down the road. The arthritis that he has at this point in time may be due to repetitive trauma from playing football, hits around his shoulder, and so on, but it's not likely to be solely the result of his repeated dislocations. The things that he should be doing are strengthening exercises, but strengthening exercises with a stabilization emphasis. So there are, you know, regular strengthening exercises you can do. Then there are strengthening exercises where the focus of them is stabilization of the shoulder. So they do some things, weight bearing, starting very simple and training that up. They do higher repetition, higher speed, smaller range of motion exercises to stabilize the shoulder. So there are a number of different things he can do. It'd probably be worthwhile to see a physical therapist to get instruction in some of these exercises, particularly if he's going to be active and he wants to lift weights. He will put his shoulder at risk if he does heavy weight lifting in a traditional fashion with a shoulder that has a tendency for instability.
Yeah. And the other thing the therapist could do is, besides the strengthening stabilization, is to make sure that Chad knows how to increase flexibility through the rib cage, the upper back area.
Okay.
That could stiffen up on lots of people, and that impacts posture, which impacts shoulder movement. And so with the injury that he's had, the more movement he can get through the thorax, the mid-back, the less his shoulder has to do. And so there's good self-stretches using tennis balls and foam rollers and exercise balls that the therapist could show him as well.
All right. Makes good sense. Thanks, Chad, for calling. Eleanor in Neillsville, we go to you now. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, Nelsonville.
Oh, sorry.
No big deal. I went to bed between Christmas and New Year's okay and woke up the next morning limping profusely, and I still am. The mid-November, was kind of sore when I sat on a chair, like where my leg joins my bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told it's maybe a lateral or spinal stenosis. I've had an MRI, an X-ray, I've been 15 times to the chiropractor, and last week had a steroid shot, and I'm still limping. Any ideas?
Okay. Well, stenosis is a relatively common condition as something we collect as we age. It just means there's narrowing for nerves that exit the spine, and those nerves go down into the arms and legs. And so when
pressure, about arms and legs?
Well, and then the pain goes down into the legs or arms, depending on where the stenosis is or narrowing. So in your case, they're thinking it's in that low lumbar area. So was there an injury or an accident, Eleanor? Did you slip or misstep at all?
Nope, not that I know of.
Okay.
It was the middle of November. It was just kind of sore when I would sit too long, like on a desk chair.
Okay.
In the middle of December, when I had a regular checkup, he said he thought it was lateral stenosis.
Okay. All right. So you have the same pain when you're sitting and walking both?
No. Just when I sit, it's sore. When I'm sometimes it comes and goes. the soreness was on the left side of the body. I limp on the right side.
Okay.
And the right side, it's quite sore sometimes, just below my waistline on the right-hand side.
Okay. All right. Any numbness or tingling with this or weakness in your feet?
I don't feel that there is, but I limp profusely.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. All right. Well, a couple things. If you haven't seen a physical therapist, I'd recommend considering that. There's a variety of exercises and techniques that we use to get the pain up out of the leg. The other thing...
pain in the leg. Never has been.
Okay.
No pain in the leg.
Okay. The other thing that the therapist could do is also check out your hip. It could be part related to your back, and some could be related to the hip itself. So that they should be examining your low back area, the area of your pelvis, and the hip joint, all of those. And there may be a variety of either whether it's flexibility or strengthening exercises that just make all those activities easier for you. But typically with stenosis, there's pain that goes down into the leg and oftentimes below the knee.
No, I didn't. I haven't had that.
Okay. All right. So there could be a combination of things going on between the hip and that low lumbar area that could be addressed.
Mm-hmm. I went to a bone specialist, and he said there was a shot I could have. He didn't think it would do any good, and I asked him about exercises, and he just told me a couple little simple exercises to do. He didn't mention therapy.
Yeah, I think you need more than that. And ideally, if there was a pool you could get to with some with some advice, the pool would be a place where you could probably do more exercise than outside water at this point in time. May help jumpstart this for you.
Right. Okay.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Eleanor. Appreciate your call. And good luck to you. Connie and Arcadia, we're on to you. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I have a kind of a general question about preventing back pain. I'm 69 years old, and I get these little twitches in my back, and sometimes, they're worse than others. I recently ran across a book called 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back, and mainly it talks about posture, that if we keep ourselves really straight and work at that and think about that a lot, that will prevent a lot of problems. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about the whole thing.
Well, posture is critical for all of us, for a healthy back as well as a healthy neck. And keeping it perfectly straight, that kind of puts the spine in its ideal position. But at the same time, we're designed to move. And so if somebody works really hard at keeping their spine stiff upright like that, that can end up causing minor problems down the road. If you're sitting, what can really help from the posture standpoint is the chair you're sitting in or the car you're in. And some people need a lumbar support to support the natural curves of the spine so that you're maintaining upright posture without a lot of muscle activity. There's some, but not a lot of muscle activity.
Okay.
Where when you're really holding yourself upright rigid, the muscles are working a lot harder than they're designed to work for that specific task.
Mm-hmm.
So posture is important, and the chairs that we're sitting in can make a big difference of how comfortable are we. But we are designed to bend and move, and most people can slump for a while, and that's just fine.
Okay.
But if you're in certain postures for long periods of time, that's where it can start catching up with you a bit.
And then after that, strengthening exercises, strengthening, 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 keeping your core strong, hips, pelvis, abdominals, upper back, and shoulders and legs, because the stronger your extremities are, the more the load they can share and take some of that off of your spine, keeping your body weight down. All good things for a healthy back.
Yeah, they're tied in with that. There are some activities out there, whether it's yoga or Tai Chi or Pilates, that are really designed to do exactly what Lori said, and postural awareness. So your body's in a better position without you having to think about it. Hmm. And so that's also a good thing that people can work into their weekly or monthly regimen.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Connie. Appreciate it. I've got Ed from Chicago, but I believe is traveling through Wisconsin. Hi, Ed.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about knee pain. I am a long-distance runner. I'm always running, training through the year. I run about 3 marathons a year. I average about 40, sometimes 60 miles a week, and I noticed recently that, and it was by accident, I was kneeling down for maybe 10, 15 minutes. The next day, I had tremendous pain in the knees. It lasted like a day or two, and it went away. I can still run, no significant injuries, but every time now I kneel down on a hard floor, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
Where is the pain? In the front of your knee?
It's more like an ache in the whole knee. I tried to pinpoint it. I couldn't.
Okay. And any other activity? What activities hurt most when your knee hurts? You know, walking, sitting, stairs?
Sounds like just kneeling.
Walking and stairs, yes.
Walking
I mean,
and stairs.
Sometimes it's painful enough, to, especially one side, the left side. I can't even walk without pain. I can still walk, but it's
okay.
Painful.
Okay. And may I ask your age?
48.
Okay. Well, what you describe sounds like patellofemoral pain. When you kneel down, you tend to, well, you kneel on your kneecaps. And what you do is you compress the joint surface, the undersurface of your kneecap against the bony surface of the bone below it. And if you do that for a long period of time, even 10 to 15 minutes, that joint surface isn't getting any nutrition. You're kind of squeezing all the nutrition out of it and putting a tremendous load on it. So your kneecaps are telling you they're not happy. They don't like that. So
I realize that now.
Yes, you realize that now. So you're moving into the age category where your joint surfaces aren't going to recover as quickly. When you were younger, you could kneel down like that, and your joint surfaces were more robust, and they could accommodate it, and they could recover from it faster. Now you're getting to the age where they don't recover as well. So if you're going to be kneeling for any length of time, you need knee pads, you need a cushion to kneel on, or you need to not kneel for so long. Kneel on one knee, then shift positions and kneel on the other knee if you have to stay down. You don't have a cushion. But basically, your kneecaps aren't going to like that at this point in time. So you need to find an alternative posture or some such thing.
Well, I have another question. I also cross-train. Would squats be a problem for this in this case?
Squats,
or in general?
Squats put a tremendous load on your kneecap. Yes. So... I wouldn't say you shouldn't be doing it, because keeping your quadriceps strong is a good strategy. I wouldn't do deep squats. I would stay from straight up full extension down to about 45 degrees that the literature would suggest. Once you go down between 45 and 90 degrees, the load on your joint surfaces increases exponentially. It increases faster than the surface area over which that load is distributed. So it puts a lot more load on your kneecap. So I would just watch the weight. I would allow sufficient recovery between reps and sets, and watch your range of motion.
Now, should I, does it have anything to do with the mileage? I didn't notice it had anything to do with the mileage that I run. Towards the race, I up the mileage. But, I could be doing 50, 60 miles a week easily.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry so much about that. I mean, that's what you love to do. And the range that your kneecap works in is relatively small. I just make sure you're on good joint surfaces. You keep your flexibility, keep your strength up. If you can, run on a dirt track. Make sure your shoes are in good shape. If you haven't had anyone look at your feet, you can look at your posture in your lower extremity to see if an orthotic might help you. Okay. But those would be the things to think about.
Lots to think about there. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenall, professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking your questions about your ache or pain or sprain or strain at 1-800-642-1234 and email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Adele in Brookfield next. Adele, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question. 4 weeks ago, I rolled my ankle, and they found 4 days later that I have a avulsion fracture in the distal fibula, my ankle. Again, it's 4 weeks. I'm in my 50s. I've relied on my 30-minute walks, daily walks, for my mental health. And without that, I'm struggling to just wondering what are some suggestions, things that I might be able to do during this healing time to help speed things along?
How are you immobilized? What kind of immobilization do you have?
I have a big boot that I wear.
Okay. And what's the follow-up plan? When do you see your physician again?
In another...
2 weeks?
2.5 weeks.
Okay. All right. And you've been told to stay in that boot until then?
Well, yeah. They gave me an air cast and said I can try that.
Okay.
Just kind of leaving it up to me, but okay. It's just saying I can do some...
Great. Yeah, I'd put on the air cast and I'd walk. I'd put it on first around your house.
Huh?
I'd put on the air cast... And with your walking shoes, and I'd walk around your house with it or out for short distances and see how it feels. And if that's feeling pretty good, then, you know, and you can be on it in your house for 30 minutes or so, then, you know, go out for a 10-minute walk with it on and gradually increase your time. So the idea is to start weaning out of the boot and into the air cast.
Mm-hmm. And the elevating and icing, is that still a good thing? It feels good to do that.
If you're seeing swelling, then go ahead and elevate it. Icing, sure, if it feels good, go ahead and put the ice on, especially after you've been on it. But yes, it's time to start moving into more activity at this point. And you kind of have to let pain be your guide and your symptoms. So if you get a lot of swelling, then it might be too much. Mm-hmm. Or if the swelling can't be controlled with your icing and elevating, then it's too much. But if you can start increasing your activity level, decrease the boot, and start it working your way out of it, that's the goal.
Yeah.
And on average, for bone healing, is it, somebody had mentioned 6 to 8 weeks.
Yep, 6 to 8 weeks.
And but prior to that, you can do the weight bearing is good for it to stimulate.
Yes, and particularly in your case, because the distal fibula is not a weight bearing bone, it provides muscle attachments and ligament attachments, but it's not particularly weight bearing. If it was on the other side, it might be a different story. But
mm-hmm.
but the location
mm-hmm.
of your fracture would allow you to be a little more aggressive.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The big thing for Adele is that's why the air cast, she just want to roll that ankle over and pull on that spot again. So, or if you can figure to break a bone in the lower leg, the fibula is a better bone. But if she has access, she could also bike. There's no reason why she couldn't bike or maybe swim to get that heart rate up to where she's used to.
Let's go to Yvonne in Appleton next. Yvonne, hi to you.
Good morning. 2 weeks ago today, I was diagnosed with a blood clot in my right calf.
Okay.
It's quite painful, and this was diagnosed after I had been ill with a month of bed rest. I'm quite anxious to get back into my physical fitness activities. I've taken Pilates for many years, and I'm accustomed to walking 10,000 steps a day, but of course, my aerobic function has been destroyed by being in bed for a month. What I would like to do is start out on my home treadmill for about 15 minutes a day and then just increase that gradually and start some gentle Pilates moves. What I'm afraid of doing is breaking that little bugger loose, the blood clot loose, and having it cause mischief somewhere else in my body. Are there any guidelines for how active I can be?
It's a very good question to call, and you're right. That is the biggest potential complication of blood clots in the legs is that the clot can break free, and usually they end up in the lungs, and that's where they can cause major, major problems. Typically, people with clots, they're on medications to help the body stabilize the clot, so the body and the drugs can slowly break that blood clot down. And then oftentimes there are follow-up blood tests to make sure that you're on the right dose. So your idea of starting slow and gradually increasing is right on target, but you need to work really closely with your physician on this. Because if you overdo activity with the blood thinners that I'm assuming you're on, you can cause bruising or bleeding. And so the lab test that they do as follow-up should help tell them, one, how stable the clot is and when you can start activity. So when do you contact your physician again to go back for the next follow-up, Yvonne?
I am right now on weekly blood tests, and I'm taking 4 milligrams of warfarin a day.
Okay. All right. When do you go back in for your next blood test?
Friday.
Okay. All right. Well, what I would do is I would just kind of hang in there and not do anything more than you've been doing until Friday. But when you go in Friday, bring in the list of questions that you just called in with. I mean, they're great questions. And the sooner you can get active, the better for you, your general health, and also for your vascular system. So there's just a fine line of getting the right amount of activity but not overdoing it to cause some of the complications that you mentioned.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I am really tired of bed rest at this point.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
Yes, well, I tell you, and make sure that they hear that from you. And when you go in for the blood tests, if you're not scheduled to see the physician or nurse practitioner or physician assistant, if you're just going in for the lab work, you know, see if there's one of those other three that you can talk to, who can look at your lab test values and look at your medication and give you some guidelines for return to activity.
Okay. All right.
Good.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling, Yvonne. Jean in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I'm 76, and I was a couple of years ago diagnosed with stenosis in the lower back after in the lower lumbar region after an MRI, and of course some doctors want to operate right away, and I thought I don't want to do that. So I've tried therapy, chiropractor, even acupuncture, and I'm trying to avoid surgery or having vertebrae fused back there. I've seen this ad on a commercial on TV for a back-to-life machine, which you lay on the floor and your knees are up over this thing, and it kind of gently lifts and rotates so that you're stretching the spine. And I don't know. What do you think of that?
It sounds like it's a traction device where it's gently stretching that low lumbar area. If I'm thinking what you're describing, it's kind of a self-traction device.
Do you know the name of it?
Get that, or Back to
Back
Life.
Back to Life, she said. We'll see if we can find it.
We'll try to pull it up on the internet here while we're talking. You know, the surgery, it's considered when people are having progressive nerve problems, meaning you're getting weaker and weaker in the legs, you're losing sensation in the legs, or you're having problems going to the bathroom.
Well, I'm having, I think, pinched sciatic nerve down that one leg and into the foot. And an orthopedic doctor had said that one vertebrae moves back, you know, in and out or back and forth when I twist.
Okay.
So he wants to... He thinks it should be fused. You know, I'm 76. I want to be comfortable, but I hate to think of this a long recuperation.
Right. Well, and it can be a long recuperation.
I know.
It's a big surgery.
I know.
Have you tried any of your rehabilitation in a pool in the water?
No, I haven't.
You know, if you have access to a pool at a local hospital or clinic, you know, in the water you get the buoyancy, or so your spine is unweighted, just like you're getting with that Back to Life device.
Mm-hmm.
And in the water is where you can tend to be a little more aggressive with stretching, but importantly, flexibility and strengthening exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I would really work hard on trying to get in the water and rehab there. You know, we have the device on the computer now, and that what it's doing is it's gently stretching, flexing your low lumbar spine,
mm-hmm.
Which is similar to what traction would do and similar to unweighting would do in the water. The trick is any of those are designed to decrease the pain enough where you can become more aggressive from a flexibility and a strengthening standpoint. They tend not to be the end all, the cure,
right?
But it's not like you need something to get you over this first hump.
I can't stand or walk very long without some support.
Yeah,
a rollator helps a lot. You know, I can go a mile for a walk if I can sit periodically.
Right. Well, keep up with that activity, and you can see if you can somehow hook up with a rehabilitation, a physical therapist that has a pool, and see if they can get you in the pool for a while and see if that can help jumpstart this for you.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling, Gene. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests here as we talk aches, pains, sprains, and strains on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault of the UW. Really glad to have them with us today. You can join us at 800-642-1234 with your question and email as well. As a matter of fact, we have some emails. Wilma emailed us and is 55. I run no more than a mile on a treadmill and have new shoes. About 2 months ago, I developed very localized pain on the inside of both knees when I run or jump or bend the knees more than 90 degrees. I've not consulted a physician, as walking and stair climbing are not problems. Should I wear a brace? Any thoughts on this?
There's not a brace that's going to help with this particular kind of a problem. This is a weight-bearing issue. So she complains of pain with bending more than 90 degrees or jumping, and those are both activities that put a lot of stress on your joint surfaces and on the cartilage, the meniscus and the articular cartilage in your joint. So it sounds to me that, you know, age 55, that the repair systems aren't working as well anymore. And when she comes down and really loads her joint surfaces, they don't like that. So there's not a brace that's going to help. At this point, it's really important to keep your quadriceps strong. So if she's not doing any strengthening exercises for her quadriceps and her glutes, hip muscles, to keep that core strong, I would suggest doing that. Staying in the good shoes, that's great. You know, watching the joint surfaces she's on, I'm not sure what kind of shock absorption her treadmill has, but a lot of the treadmills are fairly rigid in terms of lacking shock absorption. Now that the weather's nice, if you could get out on a path, a dirt path or something, or a cushion track, that would be better too. But avoiding repetitive squatting past 90 is going to be in her interest as well.
On to Ryan in Round Lake, Illinois. Ryan, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason for my call today isn't so much to talk about the injury I've got, more as to make sure I don't get a further injury. I'm only 25 years old, but back when I was in high school, I sustained an injury playing sports where my left shoulder, the best I can describe it, felt like it popped. Imagine I fell into, the push-up position,
mm-hmm.
except straight onto my elbow, so there was no shock absorption between the ground and my shoulder.
Ooh, ouch.
it almost felt as though I've never had a joint go out of socket, but that's what I can describe it, I think, feeling like.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, say if I sleep with my arm over my head or underneath the pillow, sleep on my arm, the shoulder, or put on a sweatshirt, the shoulder will kind of get into a toggle position almost, where it feels like if it's going to move, it's really going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go see a physician about this at one point, and he gave me some physical therapy moves that I should be working on. At the time, I was doing a lot of rock climbing, so I figured that my rock climbing was kind of a substitution for strength training in the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And it did seem to help. I had decreased pain and decreased instances of this. However, since that time, I have stopped rock climbing due to a move to the Chicagoland area. And I guess I'm just wondering, is this something that could come back to bite me later on in life? Also, another small little wrench to throw in there, I have very mild Ehlers-Danlos syndrome also. It portrays with me as mostly just stretchy skin. However, okay. I do know that it does affect some ligaments and joint type things also.
Sure. Okay. Is your left arm your dominant?
No. I'm
okay.
Right-handed.
Okay. And did the doctor send you to physical therapy when you injured it, or did he just tell you some things to do?
Both.
Okay.
However, I was a pretty poor patient, and
right.
I did not
okay.
follow through with going
okay.
to the PT.
All right. Well, the most likely thing that happened, given the push-up position and landing on your elbow, was a posterior dislocation or subluxation. A possibility is a shoulder separation. Does your one shoulder on your left side, does that stick up high when you look at yourself without a shirt on? The top of your shoulder, you see that point stick up?
Yeah, no, everything looks
okay.
fairly
All right.
normal.
Okay, then you probably went out the back. And if you have mild Ehlers-Danlos, which is a genetic connective tissue disease that gives you loose connective tissue, you probably have a tendency for instability. So it is something that, particularly in combination with your Ehlers-Danlos, can set you up for problems down the road. And we had a caller earlier with some shoulder instability from an old injury, and I would suggest the same for you, and that is seeing a physical therapist with instruction on strengthening exercises for somebody who needs stabilization. And the way those strengthening exercises are done is different than people who are going in just to bulk up. So rock climbing, the strengthening got you part of the way there, but you really need some specific stuff for someone who has a tendency for instability. And
okay.
just doing those as a matter of routine will be good for your shoulder. It's also going to help save your neck because you're going to start loading your neck and your spine if you have problems with shoulder stability.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, and good luck, Ryan. Appreciate your call. And Tim and Madison will give you a chance now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. What a great show you guys are having.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I'm thinking about buying a heart rate monitor for lifting weights and doing elliptical and treadmill. I was just wondering what your opinion is on that.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think monitoring heart rate before, during, and after exercise is a good idea for everybody and anybody. You want to get one that's quality, and what then tied with that is what is your ideal heart rate? What should your target heart rate be? And then that gives you some targets that you can go for in terms of getting an aerobic effect and then how quickly your heart rate comes back down to baseline after you stop is also an important monitor. So working with a physical therapist can tie into what's a good target heart rate for you and how to monitor other signs or symptoms, or if you're going in to see your physician for any kind of a physical exam or checkup soon, they could also work with you too. But I think generally it's a good idea for anybody out there to be monitoring heart rate when they're doing aerobic and weightlifting activities.
All right.
Oh, great. Then one more question. Can you recommend a weightlifting DVD or anything, or don't you know about that?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't either.
But if you're going to take a good look at them and make sure that whoever is the instructor on that is certified, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, there is a specialty exam for that. So they're called certified strength and conditioning specialists. CSCS is the abbreviation that goes behind their name. So make sure they're certified at a minimum.
You might just go online. One of the people I have on my show's name is Dustin Maher, and Maher. And if you just type his name in, you'll get – he has a number of videos online for free, and he's got a website. And he's very big into weightlifting as an exercise, not necessarily for competition, but for general health.
Great.
So it might be worth it for you to check in on his website.
All right. Yeah.
That'd be a good idea. Yeah, it sounds like Tim is going to be working out at home as opposed to a fitness center, and you know, getting the right equipment. Where people can get hurt with lifting free weights is if the weights are on the floor.
Right.
You bend down to pick them up, and then you lift, you're tired, and you put them back down. If you can get a rack so the weights are up off the floor, closer to waist height, and then also getting benches. So the more work you can do with your back supported against something can also help protect your back and shoulders.
Good luck. Thanks very much, Tim. And Clark in Dale, we'll go to you now. Hi, Clark.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in reasonable shape. I'm 78 years old. And I went to a doctor last fall, and he put me through some motions and said I have a rotator cuff, and gave me some pain pills and little else. It has gotten better. The two times that it bothers me is when I'm sitting in a recliner chair or in bed at night. Otherwise, it doesn't bother me. When it does bother me, if I just get up and walk around, the pain stops.
Mm-hmm.
How necessary might surgery be, and how helpful might some exercises be? I do walk with 3-pound weights on ski poles outside.
Okay. So you have the weights on the ski poles.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So was it your rotator, was it your shoulder that took you to the doctor in the first place?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You know, at 78 years old, you're probably in the majority of people who have rotator cuff problems. And I would say, in answer to your question, how useful is surgery? Given what you've told me, not particularly useful. First, there's not going to be any rotator cuff repair. They're not going to go in and try to repair the rotator cuff. If they did surgery, what they do is they shave away some of the bone that sits over the rotator cuff to make a little bit more room for it. They also often take out some of the bursa that tends to be kind of boggy and thickened. And a lot of times it's that gives you the symptoms. Before they consider that as an option, you should consider a cortisone injection into that bursa, because it's very predictive of whether or not the surgery will actually be successful for you. If they inject that bursa and you get pain relief, then it suggests that you might get pain relief from the surgery.
Okay.
So it's a really good test to do ahead of time. But before that, I would see a physical therapist and get instructed in some specific strengthening exercises for your rotator cuff so that you can strengthen what remains of your rotator cuff as well as the muscles that support the rotator cuff so that they can take some of that workload.
All right.
But the fact that you recover so well when you get up and move around, it's really hard for surgery to improve upon that. In fact, if you had surgery, they would consider that a good result.
Clark, the other thing that the therapist can do is talk to you specifically about sitting, your sitting posture in that recliner and the positions you're in at night. Maybe some using pillows or support that could make those two activities more comfortable for you as well.
All right.
Yes, I experimented a little bit with that.
Okay. All right. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Art in Chicago up next. So let's go there. Hi, Art.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Sure.
Here's my question. I've been driving a truck for over 20-something years. Pretty decent shape for a 50-year-old man. No weight problems, no high blood pressure. But I'm wondering what the effect of sitting, as long as I've been sitting, has on my quick twitch muscles. I mean, one year I could dunk, and next year I could touch the rim.
Dunking basketball is a problem for me, too. I can't blame it on anything else. I just can't jump. You know, with the driving, it's a combination of the – it's typically either hips or the low back area that can break down over time. And it's the prolonged sitting and also the vibration that goes along with driving a truck that can get you into trouble. And I'm assuming, Art, since you've been driving as long as you have, that you have a good back support, you know, in that truck, so the natural curves of your spine are supported. But having said all that, besides the good back support and good seat, is, you know, to when you stop and take breaks, that you get out and you walk and you gently stretch your back and legs in different directions. But trying to, you know, whenever it's feasible to split that driving up and get out and do some walking and stretching can help. And then when you reach your destination, it helps if you're not just going someplace to sit some more. That, again, if there's some sort of physical activity that you can do. You know, the fact that it sounds like you're in good shape and you're active really bodes well for you. But it's that low back that is probably a greatest risk for you with your occupation.
All right.
So then the culprit is the drive then that has taken away the explosiveness out of my leg.
Well, it's, you know, it's possible. I mean, it just could be just the aspect of aging. You know, as we age, our body tissues change. We tend to lose some strength and we lose some agility as we age. And so, you know, it's probably more likely related to that as opposed to the driving itself. As long as you're as active now as you were 10 years ago, you know, when you're not driving. So whether you're playing basketball or you're running or walking, if you maintain that level, that's what's critical for you in terms of your fitness.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not hearing anything that tells me that the driving specifically independently is why you're not getting the power out of your legs. You know, if you're working out, exercising, you can do more power work for your legs in terms of specific types of weightlifting. Can make it somewhat task specific, and that may help some for you.
And thanks a lot for calling. Our good luck to you. Mike in New Berlin emailed us, "My knees will pop while walking downstairs," Mike says. "I can hear it and feel it. The pop is felt on the kneecap. I play rec hockey, but otherwise, but I've had no injuries. I also am on my feet 8 hours a day."
Well, we tend not to lose a lot of sleep over snap, crackle, and pop unless it's clearly associated with pain, such as, my knee pops and then it really hurts, or it cracks and then it gives way. So I'm not hearing any of that from Mike. So that being said, our joints crack. It makes it hard to sneak up on somebody. But otherwise, it doesn't seem to be associated with any long-term problems. What I would suggest is making sure that his quadricep muscles in the front of his thigh, are nice and flexible. The popping is probably coming from the undersurface of his kneecap from playing hockey. He may have a roughened area on the cartilage under his kneecap. So keeping his quadricep strong, keeping his quadriceps flexible, keeping his hamstrings flexible will all help maintain the health of his knees in the long run.
And Bob from Madison separated his shoulder about 6 months ago from a bike accident, went through various rehabilitative exercises, has lost a lot of strength he had previously had from this accident. His physician stated 2 months ago that he was ahead of schedule. How long should I anticipate before I return to full strength and completing all of my weightlifting exercises at my previous weight levels? Also, should I be able to resume all shoulder-type exercises at some point?
Well, it's a little hard to answer that question, really, for anybody when you say, well, can I get back to what I was doing before? You know, we know a lot about function, but in terms of what people's actual capacity is, it's hard to predict what someone's capacity is going to be and what the tissues will allow them to do. So what we can say is that he's apparently on a trajectory that has already exceeded his physician's expectations. So that's makes me optimistic. It sounds like he had a fairly significant injury. That's, on the other hand, that's not quite as favorable for him. But, in the next couple of months, he should be able to get back on his bike. Hopefully, he's still doing some rehabilitation. He said he was doing rehabilitation. Hopefully, he still is, because it sounds as though he hasn't achieved his full strength. He needs to keep adding challenge to his exercises to keep improving his strength until he hits either his desired functional level or his capacity, whichever comes first. And because he's going back to biking, he should be doing weight-bearing exercises, things in a push-up position, adding resistance and challenge that way. He should be riding a stationary bike with weight-bearing on his hands and so on to prepare himself for that kind of activity.
And Jim in Madison wonders about, Could you tell us about, is it peroneal tendons?
Yeah,
is that the correct
peroneal
word?
Or perineal.
Perineal, people. And how to stretch that system. I ask this because when I jog walk, I feel acute pains above the ankle on the outside. Would you please cover the modalities, how to stretch, how long and often, and how should the and should the stretching be combined with other stretches, and if so, which ones?
Well, the peroneal tendons are on the outside of the ankle, and it's not typical to have pain there when you're running. So the question is, why is he having pain there? So I think being seen for an evaluation of his biomechanics, his posture, his running style to see what's going on would be useful. But typically to stretch that, you stretch the peroneals by turning the sole of your foot towards the inside. So you want to turn it towards your big toe side, and that stretches the things on the outside. There are other things that can go wrong on the outside. There's a problem called compartment syndrome, and other things that can go wrong on that side. So it'd be interesting to take a look at his biomechanics, his running style, and see if there's some other issue.
And Richard in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had cancer surgery last August, and as part of that, I lost the femoral nerve in my right leg. So my quadriceps are gone on that side. I'm wearing a brace. I'm now trying to extend my distance walking and so forth. And, you know, I'm having quite a bit of pain in the knee and in the hip joint. And I'm just wondering whether I've seen a physical therapist once. I've got some exercises I do to try to strengthen my remaining muscles. And I'm just wondering whether I should be pursuing more physical therapy at this point, or that's sort of par for the course, or what to do.
All right.
Yeah, it's a good call. We like calls like that, looking ahead. And, you know, going in periodically is important because to make sure the exercise program is progressed so you continue to maximize your rehabilitation potential. There's a variety of levels of strengthening and stability exercises for someone who's gone through what you have, and there's no limit to how much you can compensate for what's missing. And so the assumption is your body's changing as you do gain strength, and so the different set of activities or exercise would be important. You know, whether you work out with a therapist that you're coming back in once a month or once every 6 weeks, but I think that would be very, very reasonable to maximize what you have.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And Jessica, do you have a real quick question? Hi, Jessica.
Hi, I do. I gave birth to my son 11 months ago and I had ongoing pain from extending underneath my kneecap down to the outer part of my ankle. And it also includes numbness in my ankle area. And I just wonder if you have any recommendations on what that might be. I did see a specialist and he said, well, if it's just numb, kind of live with it. And it's so painful that it's hard to carry him or any other kinds of weight.
Okay. And we have about 20 seconds.
Yeah. Well, Jessica, if you two things. If you haven't seen a physician for this, maybe your OBGYN as a starting point, but also a physical therapist to help sort out, is that numbness and pain? It could be coming from your back. That could be related to labor, delivery, or late pregnancy. But, you know, or a combination of physician and a PT, I think it's high time. Yep.
To get going on that.
Definitely.
Thank you very much. And good luck. Thank you so much. And Bill and Laurie, thank you so much.
Pleasure as
you're
always.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
it was great.
You'll be back on May 11th. We'll do this all over again.
Sounds
great.
Good.
Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne-Brody, our guests today. Always a pleasure to have them with us and appreciate them being here. Tomorrow we'll take a look at your pet's health, but in the meantime, stay with us here on the Ideas Network.